here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Wednesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. A lot to cover after a wild night in the NHL and NBA. We'll be looking at a big win for the Leafs. How seriously do we take it? Plus, we will be going over the rest of the NHL schedule, a really tough one for a couple other Canadian teams, plus a gigantic game in the NBA as Tyrese Maxey moves up a level in the NBA superstar rankings, and we'll get to some UFC 301 talk and some WWE before the show is done. So a lot to get to. I'll stop rambling and get to the hacky. So, the Stanley Cup playoffs continue for the Toronto Maple Leafs after an overtime win over the Boston Bruins in Game 5 of their Eastern Conference quarterfinal. And the main takeaway, and look, I know I've been hard on Toronto over the last couple of days because of how abysmal they have played. This was a good performance from them. Congratulations, you've done it once in a row. Also, just a quick aside here, if they come out and win two more times, to advance to the next round, all the, like, oh, cold takes exposed are going to be ridiculous. That everything that was said about them in the moment has been 100% accurate. If this just is now the way it's going to be, then they have changed, and congratulations. But I think we're allowed to acknowledge that there has been a change, because the first few games weren't very good. This was a Toronto team without Austin Matthews that traded this situation with the urgency and desperation that the situation deserved. And we haven't always been able to say that about the Toronto Maple Leafs in situations like this. But they came out and they battled and they controlled things against Boston. They weren't able to break through until they were on a real, like, it comes from a point shot, but it's a real hardworking play. You get Domi getting just enough of a faceoff. Marner comes in, gets the puck first, gets it to the point. McCabe, boom, scores. That's what you want. And even the overtime winner, Tavares, who I've been hard on, drives to the front of the net, chance stop, Nyes is crashing in, scores. Nyes and Robertson, more so Nyes than Robertson, but I do think there's something there with Robertson. Those are the guys who, in the future, are really going to have to step up for this Leafs team to try to find that next level that a lot of people think they can get to. But they put on a ton of pressure on the Bruins in this game, and it was quite frankly a performance I didn't think they had. So good for them for not going quietly into that night. And also good on Wall, who was, I thought, really good here. There was a chance right at the start of the game. Boquist gets a just clear lane right to the goal, and he makes that stop. And there were a few times Marchand set up, I think it was Boquist again, another opportunity in tight where he was able to make that save. So he was not pressured often, especially early in this game, but he stood tall when he needed to, and goddamn did this team need him to stand tall. On the Bruins side, this is the type of performance that I was worried about coming into the postseason after a lackluster close to the regular season. Boston is only in this series and not one against Tampa Bay because they absolutely were sleepwalking their way to the finish line, and this looked like a sleepwalking team that just, yeah, you know what? It's more fun to beat them in Toronto. Maybe we'll win, maybe we won't, whatever. That this did not seem like a Boston Bruins team that was ready to have that killer instinct to put a team away. And maybe they come out in Game 6 and absolutely throttle them. But now you have a Florida Panthers team that is waiting for you after, as easy as playoff series go, that was an easy one for the Florida Panthers over the Tampa Bay Lightning. So this is why I just couldn't get into Boston as a team that could really threaten for a Stanley Cup this year, because I just don't think there is that next level to this team. They've had a good series. Absolutely. Marchand's been great. But I just don't think this team has that killer instinct that others have had in the past where they're, yeah, you know what, maybe we will, maybe we won't. Those types of performances do come back to bite you. And I didn't like what I saw there. Speaking of which, the Winnipeg Jets series is now in the books as they fall to the Colorado Avalanche, in Game 5. I believe the final ends up being 6-3. It might be more, but it was close until it wasn't at the end there. For Winnipeg, this was awful. This is a very talented hockey team that just, again, speaking of finding that postseason level, they didn't have it. They looked like they were just out there, especially coming off of such an emotional game in game one where the crowd is going crazy. And it's almost like they were expecting that crowd to lift them up again. And they never got back to that level. These looked more like games 83, 84, 85 of the postseason than it did game 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of this playoff series. And that hurt them. Like they look, Hellebuck was not great, but they were awful in front of him. Like I do think that this is the blame pie. I think there's more to the players up front than there is to Connor Hellebuck to give in this particular situation. So, yeah, just awful, just awful, awful hockey from this team, to the point where, like, you look at going forward, it's like, okay, where is the better coming from now? They're locked in on Scheifele. They're locked in on Hellebuck. There are pieces on this team that I like. Look, I like this team a lot. You know, like I like Ehlers. I like Morrissey. I like Connor. Like there are a lot of pieces on this team that you really like, but this was a startling close to the season for the Winnipeg Jets. And just a couple notes here. I hated the strategy at the end of the game where it was constant dump and chase, dump and chase, dump and chase. Vancouver did the same thing. And we'll get to them in a second with Pettersson and Miller winning a race into the corner, setting up a Besser chance. But dump and chase in theory is great when you are the bigger, crashier team and you can go in there, bing, bang, boom, get the puck. You've just beat up their team and now you get an opportunity. But Colorado was just a step ahead. And so late in the game, it felt like the last 5 minutes felt the same pattern. Jets dump it in, Avs first to it clear. Jets dump it in, Avs first to it clear. Jets dump it in, Avs first to it clear. It was just the same cycle over and over and over again. But this is the design of everything. So you have to do it. And this is my problem with dump and chase during the regular season. And I've brought it up before. And I saw it again this weekend doing some minor hockey play-by-play. So many teams. Kid will obviously be the most talented out there. But you know what? Dump and chase, because that's what coach tells me to do. We need to stop with this. And this is one of the exact reasons why. What happens when plan A doesn't work? Because I'm going to tell you something. In the playoffs, plan A don't work. It is surprising when plan A does work. And plan A for the Jets was to dump it in, and plan A for the Avalanche was to get it first and get it out. And that's what it was the whole time. And so this is why I don't mind, or I actually encourage, in the regular season, carry that puck in. Work on your controlled zone entries so that when the dump and chase isn't working, you at least know what plan B is. Like you look in basketball, for example, you look at the best basketball team in the world right now, the Denver Nuggets, and Jokic just has it all down to like basically a computer program. If yes, there, if no, here, if no, here, go there. If yes, there, you know, like just there's a lot of if thens all over for him. And it's perfect, and it makes that offense flow amazingly, and there's different options off of each one of those. Like, it's set up so well. With the Jets, it was, if no, do it fucking anyway and hope that it works, and that it's not going to. And so I think while the regular season is obviously very important for positioning and blah, 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 I do think it is also an important time to work on different situations differently, if that makes sense. Like, try some different line combinations and see what works so that when you're getting into your season being on the line, you can know, okay, well, back in June, July, or January, February, that worked. So let's try that for a little bit. And you know what? For this game against Columbus, it doesn't really matter. No dump-ins. Let's carry that puck in the whole way and see what we can get. And then if you're down 3-1 in the third period, all right, let's start working on our dumps a little bit here and try to win a hockey game. But I feel like everyone falls into this pattern. And I know I preached systems with Vancouver a little bit to try to get that back, but part of it is having a plan B. Every system looks great in practice when there's no resistance, but everyone is just so focused on, okay, this is what we're supposed to do, this is what we're supposed to do, this is what we're supposed to do, so we're gonna do it. What happens if you have to go sideways? How do you adjust? And Winnipeg just didn't seem to have that adjust in them in this game. Colorado though showed up, and basically everyone, right? Like McKinnon had like 1,000 points. Makar had 1,001. Lekkonen was great. Nichushkin just doesn't stop scoring in the postseason, apparently. All of the players came to play for Colorado. This was an entire organization stepping up, an entire organization understanding what it takes to win at this time of year. And a big thing that it takes is your goalie playing big. And while Georgiev wasn't spectacular. He was good enough, and he was great in the last little bit of this game where the Jets had a few chances with like 3, 4, 5 minutes left to get this one to a one goal game and get a bunch more life into the whiteout in Winnipeg, and they just couldn't do it. And the Avalanche were able to shut the door from there. Georgiev coming up with those big stops was huge. And now the Avalanche get to wait at least a few days before Colorado and or before Vegas and Dallas wrap up their series. And that is such a luxury for them to be able to reset and get ready for another series. Quickly, Vancouver, Nashville just wrapped up a few moments ago from when I'm recording it. So I don't have a ton of notes on this one. But Vancouver, it just they just couldn't put it away. Offensively, they got some good chances off the rush, actually some real good looks off of the rush that were stopped. But they just couldn't sustain anything until late, and they got a great look late. Besser had a few opportunities to be the hero one more time, but it just was not to be. But overall, in the body of this game, Vancouver's offense just wasn't there in the way that I felt that they needed it to be for them to step up in this series and advance beyond. And we had said coming into things a couple days ago, this was a big game for Vancouver. Take it on home ice and be able to rest for a few days. And maybe you get closer to a Thatcher Demko return, although it does seem like that's not happening in this postseason. But you just let a young team that is really dealing with a lot of this for the first time be able to take in everything that they've had and be able to breathe a little bit. But now you are going back to Smashville for game six. And if that doesn't go well, then you're a young team going into a game seven in a nervous barn in Vancouver. So this was actually a real big loss, I think, for the Canucks. On the Nashville side, they have dragged this series into Nashville Predator hockey. Low event, grinding out defense, and when there are chances, UC Saros standing on his head. Both goals tonight come from defensemen, albeit in different ways. I'm a little surprised that there was no challenge on the first goal. It felt like Savoie was kind of pushed in, but clearly they didn't, so they didn't challenge. And then point shot, whether there's a screen in front. Again, even with Demko, this is another loss for Vancouver, both losses for Vancouver, where you're looking at it, and even with Demko in there, the offense didn't play well enough to think that you could get a win, even with Thatcher Demko out in the lineup. Lastly, Carolina takes care of business against the New York Islanders. Quick note on the Islanders, I don't know where the better is coming from here. Like, this just feels like a team that is set in like 7th, 8th, or 9th in the East, and they are going to be battling to try to get in the playoffs. In some years, they'll even squeak into a top 3 spot in their division, but overall, it feels like this team is stuck, and I don't know where the better is coming from with the Islanders. For Carolina, their better came in this playoff series. Aho steps up. Teravainen had a couple big looks. Kotkaniemi was snake bit, but I thought he played really well in this series. There was just a lot of players on Carolina who came to play. The thing that concerns me is Freddie Anderson looked not great. Like, Carolina had a chance to run away and hide in this game, and Freddie Anderson allowed the Islanders to stick around for as long as they did with some pretty shaky goaltending. And if we are to presume Boston advances past Toronto, they're going to, by a significant margin, have the worst goalie in the playoffs. And that's not an awesome place to be. So I have concerns about Carolina moving beyond this point, but the series against the Rangers is going to be a blast to check out. So those are just the notes from what we saw in the NHL last night. Now let's get to just a quick one on basketball. The NBA postseason treated us to another classic last night as Tyrese Maxey has the Maxey game, helping the Philadelphia 76ers to a 112-106 overtime win over the Knickerbockers of New York, making it a 3-2 series heading back to Philly. I don't think there's a lot actionable from this. The Knicks, I thought, played a really good game. Maxey was just insane. But, I mean, if he, like, there's a lot of people who kind of saw this coming. And there might be another level for him. If that three can fall for him as consistently as it was in this game, I don't know how you defend him, because he's probably the quickest guy in the league. He is so explosive getting to the rim. And now if he can confidently shoot 35, 40% from three, then good God, how do you defend this cat, right? So this was a kind of leveling up, like, oh, what's that? Tyrese Maxey is evolving? That it felt like this one, where he has burst out of his cocoon and has now turned into a Beedrill. Like, he was unbelievable in this game. And they desperately, obviously, they needed it. They won by 6 and it needed overtime. But this game looked cooked with about a minute 40 to go, and Maxey was the one who brought them back in. Embiid looks done, right? Like, and this is not a done that I think, like, oh, well, he's just getting his legs underneath him. Is it? No. No, this is as good as it's going to get for him as he grinds through whatever is bothering him. But there's obviously no lift. He was blocked multiple times in turning the ball over, and in with all the pressure on him, there was a lot of issues with this group. He couldn't get it. He was making some buckets, but he just had to work so hard to get those buckets. I still don't think Philadelphia takes care of business in game six. And if they do, holy shit, is game seven at the Garden going to be amazing? But I think the Knicks are a better, I know the Knicks are a better team. I think they will take care of business, but holy hell, Maxey balled out with another level up game for him. And you just, it's really exciting to think about what this team can be with him and a healthy Embiid. They have another max spot. I don't know how many max guys are going to be out there. We'll see if Paul George is available. Maybe LeBron, who knows? But they are like a full healthy season of Embiid away from being a real dominant team once again. Okay, let's move into some of the fight talk here as we get ready for UFC 301 coming up this weekend. It's a bit of an underwhelming card, but there are still a couple of fighters that aren't fighting in the main or co-main event that you really need to pay attention to. It is UFC 301 week, and as we get ready for the big card coming up this weekend from Brazil, I thought I'd take a look at a couple of non-main event fighters who you need to keep an eye on. Now, for UFC 300, this list was about 15. For UFC 301, it's 2. There's someone in the third fight from the main event that doesn't have a Wikipedia page. 2 fighters on this main card don't have Wikipedia pages. But you know who does? Dracar Close. And he is fighting on this card. And I can't quit this kid. He has won 3 in a row after a real difficult loss to Beneil Dariush. And it's wild to me how far he fell down on a lot of rankings. And apparently the UFC's, because the competition has not been that stiff. He is fighting on the Facebook. Wow, there's a blast from the past. He's fighting on the Fight Pass prelims before it gets over to the main network. That is, I think, especially on this card, that is not nearly indicative of how good this guy can be. I'm not saying he wins this fight. He is a title challenger, but I am saying I'm surprised how far he has fallen from title contention given a loss to Beneil Dariush. So I think that there is quite a bit still in the tank for Dracar Close, and I think he shows it coming up on Saturday. Also, Michel Pereira has been on an absolute tear, and there was a lot of criticism around this guy coming out of, he has his debut, does a big fancy entrance thing, misses weight, knees a guy in the head when he's not supposed to, and it's like, okay, how seriously should we be taking this cat? Because right now, it seems like not very seriously. But to his credit, he came out and has put win after win after win after win together, and is starting to move up the rankings a little bit, and so I do think that this is absolutely a fighter you need to watch for UFC 301, because I think there's going to be another big performance here, and I think we're going to talk about a significant move-up fight for this guy for his next bout. So those are a couple of fighters to watch for UFC 301. We are going to look at other fight announcements coming up on Thursday. We are also going to dive into Canelo Alvarez's legacy at some point over the next couple of days before we get to the fight previews coming up on Friday. There's also a WWE premium live event coming up this weekend as they get ready for Backlash. A lot of times it's the Backlash from WrestleMania, but now it's the Backlash from the draft. Let's break it all down here as we get ready. I'm taping this. It is just after midnight. And these are the technical things that happen when I'm, tired. Wrestling talk. A lot of talk about the WWE draft. We're getting ready for Backlash here. Admittedly, I haven't been able to sit down and watch Raw. You boy, as I mentioned a couple episodes ago, boy's not feeling well. Finally got it checked out. I got bronchitis. So we are working our way through that as well as we can over here. But in terms of the draft, a lot of people were underwhelmed by it. And look, I will say, it was not the most exciting WWE draft. And that's okay. Why is it okay? Well, the first note is that, and the biggest one here, is the big thing with the draft has for a while been champions can trade brands, right? Like, even going back to one of the first, like, big ones that they did, where you had Cena go from SmackDown to Raw with the WWE Championship, and then you had Batista go to SmackDown with the World Heavyweight Championship. Like, you have these big brand shakeup things, like, oh my god, new champion on a new brand. This is amazing. That shouldn't have happened this year, and it didn't, and that was a good thing. It wasn't good for the entertainment. It would have been great if, holy fucking shit, Cody Rhodes is on Raw, and Damian Priest is now on SmackDown. This is insanity. That would have been great for the excitement of it, but you have just introduced a whack load of new championship belts and new phrasing for all of these titles. Having them jump back and forth does nothing for it. And so I think it was a good move to take that out, even though the lack of championship movement, I think, hindered the excitement level of this draft rather substantially. The other part of it is that there was some criticism that there wasn't a whole lot of big movement from brand to brand to brand to brand to brand. And I also think that's a good thing. Again, this was a draft that was necessary. It is a good way to kind of like reset things after WrestleMania and just kind of get everyone back to where they're supposed to be, because going into WrestleMania, you have guys showing up on whatever show. Sheamus gets drafted to Raw and like, oh wow, that's a great addition for Raw and a great steal from SmackDown, even though he was on Raw last week. Like, WrestleMania season, everything just gets thrown into the blender for the most part. This is a good time to just put everyone back into the show that they're supposed to be on and establish that. And they have done such a poor job leading up to the last couple of years of establishing who's a Raw guy, who's a SmackDown guy, and letting the brands kind of cross-pollinate a little bit. I think it's good that there wasn't a whole lot of movement, because the best thing about it is you establish this guy's a Raw guy, this guy's a SmackDown guy. It's not Seth Rollins bouncing from every show. It's not Kevin Owens bouncing from every show. You get a couple so that it's still there, but you're not necessarily locking into all of these big things. And just kind of confusing things. Like, I think of Triple H as a Raw guy. I think of John Cena as a Raw guy. I think of Rey Mysterio as a SmackDown guy. I know he was on both, but I think of him mainly as a SmackDown guy. You think of Edge mainly as a SmackDown guy, like the SmackDown 6. Those guys were locked in on those spots. Even though there was a little bit of it, they at least were at their home long enough to establish that base. And I think WWE needed to do that here. So, was this the most exciting draft? No, it was not. But I do think that is a good thing for the WWE moving forward into this next year. The one part of it that does kind of hinder you a little bit is that the NXT call-ups, before, when NXT started being this king of the indies with like Adam Cole and Finn Balor and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Seth Rollins and all these guys, it was like, oh my god, we are going to get to see this guy getting called up. And one of the ones we couldn't wait for was Adam Cole and the Undisputed Era, and that never really came. But you always had this excitement of, okay, Shinsuke Nakamura is going to come to Raw or SmackDown? That's insane. There wasn't that this time around. We've seen Bron Breakker for weeks on the main roster. We've seen Carmelo Hayes at times on the main roster. We saw Dragunov like an hour ago on the main roster before he gets drafted. So the big names that people could have been excited about, you kind of already got that taste of it already. And I have no problem again with how they debuted Dragunov, but it felt like, okay, this guy is getting called up. So you don't have the anticipation of, I've watched this guy on Ring of Honor for 8 years and now he's going to be on the main roster. And you kind of killed some of the anticipation early on by introducing these characters on your way up to the draft. So yes, the draft was not the most exciting, but long-term, I don't think that's really a bad thing. We will continue our look at the world of professional wrestling as the week goes on, getting ready for our Backlash preview on Friday. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. A reminder, you can get this all in podcast form. A little bonus on the podcast this week with the Jose Aldo legacy look. Recorded that one last year, but as he's fighting again this week, thought we would bring that one back for you. Make sure that if you are listening, you are subscribing and leaving a review. If you're watching, make sure you subscribe, like, and leave a comment. By the way, for those of you who are unaware, if there is just one part of this that you want to hear about, if you only want the basketball, you only want the hockey, you only want the wrestling, you only want the UFC, on the YouTube channel, I break up every segment on there. So if you just want your wrestling, it's up there. Just want your boxing, it's up there. So if you aren't aware, go check that out over on the Couch Potato Diary YouTube channel right now. Follow me on social media. I am at Primetime Klein on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And I will talk to all of you later. I'm out.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.